since he has formed a party. He's a party in the parliament now, so you don't think he should get the subvention?
I don't necessarily share that view. I think that if he runs as a party in the next general election and ends up with a position in parliament, then I can understand that. But, you know, let me ask you something. So if another member of the Barbados Labour Party or two members of the Barbados Labour Party were to quit the BLP now and form a party, you think that they too should be entitled to the money?
Well, the money should be divided between Bishop Atherley and the two other members.
You don't think that it has the potential of encouraging people to do foolishness if you do that? That, you know, people, it can create something of a whim and a fancy when it comes to this thing, you know. If money is so easily attained, that's one side of it. I mean, I'm prepared to discuss the arguments for and against.
I get the impression, because the Prime Minister said that she is not giving Bishop Atherley any money.
But she laid down a condition. She had to be going by a condition and a set of rules.
Right, so do you know the rules?
But as I just told you, as I recall, the issue revolved around the fact that that party did not contest the last elections.
I thought once a party was in parliament, it was entitled.
Now listen, look, it is better for you to take this and go and research it a bit. Because that it is not as simple. From what I gather, it's not as simple as that.
All right, let's move on to another issue now. Mm-hmm. Now, the issue of the people that are calling for the DLP to apologize.
The Dems?
No, yeah, the Dems to apologize for the last 10 years. Now, if you employed some person to do a job, and after a certain point in time, you were not satisfied with what the person was doing, and you dismissed that person, do you demand an apology from that person?
Well, no, because you fired them. You've penalized that person for the conduct that you consider to be unacceptable. So I wouldn't demand an apology. I wouldn't demand an apology.
They do the same thing to the DLP.
Yeah, but who's calling for this? You know.
Well, there are persons calling all the time that the DLP should come and apologize.
You have different voices.
They've done that over the last 10 years.
You have different voices. I don't believe that an apology by the Democratic Labour Party alone would satisfy a large chunk of the people of Barbados. The Democratic Labour Party has found itself in a situation where quite a number of the people who ran on its last ticket are going to have to go through a long period before Barbadians consider that they are acceptable. Outside of that, the party has to look for new blood, and it may very well have to look for new leadership as well. And when I say leadership, the leadership of the party cannot rest exclusively on the shoulders of one person, like the president of the party, but you need to have a core of people who are seen as, you know, having something to offer. The Dems, you know, they don't like you to say these things. The hardcore Dems can never ever identify with this kind of analysis. They say, well, you know, you don't like the Dems and that sort of thing. But I think that they got to recognize that too many of the people who were associated with the party in the last administration have been put in a position where many people do not want to hear or see them on a ticket again. Now, the party will then, in my judgment, have to, you know, do its own research and it's polling and that sort of thing to establish who is who in the group. But I don't think that an apology alone is going to do it. Even for those who are calling for an apology, they will tell you after you've given the apology, they will find something else to throw at you. And that doesn't work.
All right. I would like to suggest to the LP that the president call on all those persons who are interested in contesting the next general election to be nominated by the various branches and be approved by the General Council. And then she should set up a shadow cabinet. These people would be look at the various ministries, okay, that the government has established. They will be sports persons for the various ministries that the government has established. And this will be done every year, because since she's elected every year, these people have to be nominated and so on by the branches every year until the election is called. What do you think about that?
I really haven't given it any thought. It is clear to me from what I've heard over the years that the organs of the Democratic Labour Party apparently need to be reestablished in the eyes of those people who are members. There's got to be a greater degree of respect for the internal aspect of the political party, because that has a way of filtering out to the rest of the society, and it is demonstrated in behavior. So for instance, if people don't turn up to meetings of main organs of the party, then the rank and file of the party is not in a position to hold their feet to the fire. And these people behave as though there are laws unto themselves. And you know, you've been a Dem in the last period that the LP was in office. You know better than anybody else some of the challenges that you all had. So that's an important aspect of trying to get the party back together. You know, the selection of people. Barbados is in a situation where when it comes to selecting people for anything, you have a host of people who are academically qualified. They have first degrees, masters, and doctorates. But when it comes to work, a lot of people shirk. And the organizational behavior in Barbados over the years, as you've seen it, sometimes you have somebody who's leading a party or a group of people and doing really, really well. When that person comes off the stage, everything falls to pieces, because there is a shortage of quality leadership in our country. Do not fool yourself. That is why, in my judgment, we have had the discussion about the implementation deficit. It is not peculiar to government. It is something that exists right across the board. And there, you know, we got people who are a lot of fluff, no substance, bare fluff. They come and they grandstand and make you believe this is going to happen and that's going to happen. When you look further down the road, nothing happens at all. And what is particularly bad about it is that they remain in their positions for very long periods. That's how Barbados is. I mean, if you've seen something different, you tell me. I mean, I hear all the talk about what has to be done and the talk about the heavy lifting and stuff, but the heavy lifting cannot be done only by people who are at the political level. You need the heavy lifting among public servants. You need the heavy lifting among people in the leadership of the private sector. You need the heavy lifting among average workers in Barbados. And you have to tell me whether you see this as a country where we can expect it. Do you see it?
All right, finally, David. The Prime Minister is always saying about more hands make light work, and she needs people to do heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this oversized cabinet. Yet, anytime there's anything of any major importance that has to be done, the Prime Minister is always up front. Can you explain that for me?
What's to explain what? Anytime there's a major...
Prime Minister, anytime there's any major thing to be done, okay, the Prime Minister is the person up front.
I think, let's be honest about where we are today. Huh? Leadership demands various things of people. Huh? We are in a climate. You see what was said earlier about the failure of many people, even though they're academically qualified and all of that, to be able to deliver. You know the consequence of that? It is that the person at the top lacks the kind of confidence in those people to say, take this ball and run with it. They may give them the ball, but ever so often, you gotta look over their shoulder to make sure that they're not embarrassing you. And what you are seeing from, in my judgment, what you're seeing in leadership from the Prime Minister is twofold. Part of it is her own personality, all right? The other part of that is the fact that there are far too few people that you can actually trust to deliver, all right? And if you go anywhere, you drive a truck. If you bought a truck tomorrow or own a fishing boat, well, that's the best one of all. Own a fishing boat and ask some fellas, two fellas, to operate the fishing boat for you. The next thing you know, the fish catch that they're bringing in ain't exactly what you expect. The condition in which the boat is kept is another matter that you have to be looking at. How much diesel they put in the boat is another matter. So in other words, unless you get on that boat yourself, you are going to feel at times as though you are not in control. So this is not to be, to me, it is part and parcel of the national problem that we face. And you may well be seeing it play out there. Look, on the other side of the coin, the former Prime Minister Stewart was the complete opposite. You see, and what happened to him as a result? We had situations where it seemed as though the ministers were in charge. They could do whatever they feel like. And we complained about it because we wanted to see prime ministerial leadership. However, in this instance, the complaint is the opposite, that there's too much of it, that people are not, there's micromanagement, that people are not allowed to grow. And as a result, you are in a dangerous position because without that growth, then what happens if something happens to the PM? Of course, in politics, always remember this. Prime ministers don't like the boy growing too much, you know, because from the days way back when Eric Williams showed us in the region how it was done, anybody who went too close got their head cut off. You remember that?
Yeah, but you realize, okay, that anybody who enters into politics, all of them aspire to be prime minister. Nobody enters.
Precisely.
I want to be a backbencher.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. All right, but nice hearing from you. Thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I want to make two comments today. I got one for you that I want you to help fortify me with. Now, one is about, cut it out, is about the Barbados Workers Union accuses some of the hotels of exploiting workers. But most importantly, let me go to this one here on page 14 here, and this is all this in yesterday, Sunday, November 15th, Elsie Strickland, the lady that is 105 years old. I don't know if you read her article.
What's your concern about it?
My concern is that I am commending her energy I'm thankful that she lived to 105 and that she can make comments like this. As a young woman, Strickland traveled around the island, indulging in her favorite pastime, dancing. Today rendered immobile by feet afflicted with arthritis, and I say almost completely lost to cataract, the centenarian spent her days and nights in bed, her ears tuned each day to the Starcom network program down to brass tacks. What does she like about it? To hear what is happening, she promptly replied, adding, today they're talking about Tony Moore and the election in the St. George North. Strickland attributed her long life to in the Lord. Her life is in the Lord's hand, and she prays day and night. She's congratulating or listening to the Starcom network and the brass tacks. That's why I'm thinking about her. That answer your question, sir?
Yeah, and I hope you understand the most significant part of that. It is that there are so many people out there who listen. They never call. And there are far more listeners than there are callers.
That will be understood.
And that's why we have the special responsibility to try to make sure that we give the people who are listeners the best value for money.
I am glad that she's a listener, and I congratulate her. I wish that you would go and give her an interview and let's hear her on the ear.
Okay.
as to her comments that she would have to render.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations, Ms. Strickland. I hope that you have continual health and you live long.
Extend my congratulations to her as well.
Right. Thank you for assisting me in that regard. All right. Cut It Out is on the front page of the Yesterday Sunday Sun. And when you read this article, I don't know if you read it. Have you?
Yes, I have.
You see the amount of, look, this, in the second paragraph there, it says, this is about Mr. Dwayne Paul. Paul said there were a number of hoteliers committing injustices to workers and breaking labor laws. When you read this article and see the amount of things this article is riddled with.
So doesn't that suggest, what does it suggest to you therefore?
Well, it suggests
if the union is identifying the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then the question is, why is the union powerless to do anything about it?
Good question. But let me give you one. There's one that is goring me. I presently am in a situation where someone, the labor laws are so bad. I don't know what.
Look, let me put it another way.
Let me give you this one. If you say anything, you see, it's contract workers. You see, putting a person on contract. Let me show you the dilemma that a person can land in. You're on contract. Something happens to you because you get your full money every week. Now, when something happens to you, you can't get a cent because you're not lodged with the NIS. There's so many people, and putting people on contract.
Let me say something to you that you need to be conscious of.
Uh-huh.
When you're on contract, you're supposed to pay your NIS.
You are supposed to pay your NIS?
Yes.
Well,
those statutory requirements are you. So
okay.
If you go into a job on a contract and you don't recognize that, then you can find yourself under pressure, because it is to avoid those statutory requirements that some employers are going in that direction or have gone in that direction over the years. Now, it becomes a little bit tricky because you can find yourself in a situation where a contract employee can only work on that contract for a particular period. There's a set of guidelines by which a person is classified as a contract employee. And in many instances, people go along and ignore those guidelines until something happens and you go to the Labor Department and you discover that in real terms, the person was not a contract employee.
No, you see, I like that word you use there, and that one, investigating. See that word you talk about, tricky?
Investigating.
There's
no need for investigation on that. What is required is that you are familiar with the rules.
I am saying to you, there's a lawyer, she writes a Sunday Sun thing in, on the opinion, Miss Michelle M. Russell. She's an attorney at law and an expert in employment law. I would like her to have a word in on this. I wish she could come on your program and explain some things to workers that are in the dark as regarding. You see, in this same article, they got about persons applying for severance. Have you seen the amount of...
Look, I do not want to hear it. Because if you know what is ridiculous about this is that it comes across as though it is basically appealing to the public. It's the PR component. It comes across that way. It may not have been meant that way. Because the fundamental of all of this is that it is the union that is making the complaint. Therefore, if this thing is happening on such a scale, you would expect that the union would be taking various forms of action. There's one other point in all of this. The government of Barbados has been making, or has announced that it is making money available to these hotels to try to keep them afloat in this COVID period. Mm-hmm. How on earth can taxpayers' money and support be given to people who in turn are treating their workers badly? I mean, it does not, and the agencies, whether it's the union, the labor department, whoever, that those agencies that are supposed to look after those workers' interests behave as though their hands are tied. The union has to say why it cannot do anything about the problem. Highlighting the problem is not enough. You have to say, and then you say, or you're sending a shot across the bow. You're giving a warning that you're going to do this. But based upon what the article said, the frequency with which it is occurring is too high.
Frequency? You call that frequency, that more frequency? If you look, listen to this one quick. What made the situation worse was management held a meeting with staff. And when workers brought their union representatives to the meeting was rescheduled. And the company called the workers individually and informed them that their services were no longer needed. All of the look, this is really abhorrent. All of this, there's so much to read in this. I wish persons get a hold of this, but we'd like Miss Michelle to come, and then the litigation can come in. This, you can't go court with this. You can't all your. If you see the breaches, but there's every minute you can pollute an excerpt from this here, that is concerning, and the ministers on record. Saying that nobody coming about with a bag of money and doing this and doing that. The labor laws need to be really examined.
Examined.
And you are right when you said giving
not
all
the
examined. Money.
The laws don't have to be examined. Stop going on that path. The laws are there.
Are there. Okay.
All right. What needs to be done is that it should be enforced. If you feel that the workers are being so badly treated, then something, either through the court process or through the industrial process, you do something about it. Complaining about this is not enough.
Right. But I am going to close on this. I am satisfied that a lot of breaching is happening and persons are out there groping and at the risk they don't know we represent.
Part of the problem, Raul, is that a lot of companies are also under tremendous pressure. This situation with COVID is very, very serious. I do not know what kind of winter season we are going to have. Some of those hotels, I wouldn't be surprised if some of them go to the wall. All right? It is not an easy situation. However, what is required here is something that is going to be hard to achieve in the tourism sector of this country.
Yep.
If you talk to people who know this industry well, the distrust between the people who are the leaders of the industry and those who work in the industry, the employees, that distrust is great.
Great, very
significant.
Great.
Yep. And there is too much negativity and animosity. It is something that we don't come to terms with it, I would think. That a central player in all of this would be people who are in the social partnership and that sort of thing, to see to what extent you can bridge that kind of divide. The two sides don't trust one another at all.
So this does not augur well for work relations. This does not augur well for productivity. This does not augur well for going forward. This is something that has to be addressed, though. Seriously. Real serious. But I don't know.
But the question is how?
I guess all they have to come, forget all the acrimony, and let them sit down and say, look, fair play for fair work and fair, whatever, fair all the time going forward, and let us keep it that way. And they've got to put a watchdog over what's happening. That's the only way to come out of this. But as you rightfully think, both of them are interested in one another. And I can tell you something, I still got, I had this discussion over time. I don't know if they had no money put down, if them could be so broke and this and that, but you're saying it, which in, I don't know, you might not say
right,
that.
The people in tourism suffer from this constant allegation.
But it starts to X amount of money per night.
That the money.
Big money is at the restaurants.
That a lot of the money is left out of the country and that sort of thing. So
good.
That's the kind of undercurrent of negativity that prevails in the industry. I mean, you and I know that we hear that often.
It's a real interesting one, but it has to be resolved somehow, somewhere. And I think the quicker, the better, because persons, obviously, that are not getting any salaries and in this dilemma will be hurting. So somebody has to take it up and bring it to a good, some solace about this. Definitely, I'd like to hear more input from callers as regarding. And try and remember Ms. Strickland.
All right, sir. All right, thank you very much. Dr. Brastax, hello.
Good morning, David.
Morning.
Now, David, I need to carry out my contribution this morning, okay? And if you have ads coming, please let me continue after your ads.
What do you mean? How much time do you need?
In a long time, David, honestly, it's not a long time, but I just want to make my contribution. And to be honest with you, it can take about four different contributions on the Scotland program. And I'm speaking mainly about the St. George North by election. But before going to that, I'm going to be very quick. It's 3 points I want to tell you. Your caller who mentioned to you about callers restricting the callers, he was spot on. I always believe the callers should be restricted to just two calls per week. Every single caller, rather than you getting one person come on four or five times a week. I do it myself. I talk to only you and Peter. And if I come on the third time, is if something important come on, whereby you had to come with the third call.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe you should let everybody do two calls. Now, you got even a caller. I don't want to call the name. But David, it's really, really disturbing to hear a particular caller call a program. This will be stationed seven times in one single day. And it happens almost every day, the call, almost every program. Like the last time I counted, your person made seven calls on VOB. And I don't like
it. Not seven calls on Brass Stacks.
No, but throughout the day, I hear this particular voice all the time. You must know who you're talking about, but you won't mention the name.
I think I do.
Now, George Payne, you mentioned something also about George Payne. David, if I honestly had to pick out the most committed person to the Barbados Labour Party, I would tell you George Payne before the shadow of a doubt. So I know George Payne is having little problems with the party, but he never had the problems or growth. He had always come and speak his mind, but he remained committed and loyal. He's the most loyal member in the Barbados Labour Party, as far as I'm concerned. Now let me get to my real contribution, though.